Welcome to the Litigation Finance Podcast. I'm your host, John Freund.
This podcast is brought to you by Litigation Finance Journal, the only dedicated news source for the litigation finance industry.
Please visit www.litigationfinancejournal.com. Our guest today is Adam Gershon, co-founder and CEO of Gershon Capital Partners, a private investment manager dedicated to secondaries investments and legal assets with more than $800 million in assets under management. Adam co-founded and was CEO of Gershon Keller Capital, which from its launch in 2013 grew into the largest investment firm focused exclusively on legal and regulatory risk, raising more than $2 billion of institutional capital before its acquisition in December 2016. He went on to serve as president of Burford Capital, the leading global finance firm focused on law, before co-founding litigation boutique Keller Postman. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So given all of that diversity and breadth of your experience in the legal market, let's start with your focus exclusively on secondaries within this new venture. What is that about? Can you explain that for us?
Sure. Well, as you flagged, we've sort of worn a couple different hats in this ecosystem and have been investing in and around the space for over a decade. So I think first and foremost, we have lived and breathed the end user need first as the largest fund manager in this space and then at the largest public company in this space, that there's a noted lack of liquidity. And once you enter these investments, you're in them until they self-liquidate and ultimately resolve. And we learned firsthand, I think, all the natural times and inflection points where a sale made sense for what we were trying to manage to, be that duration, liquidity, taking a mark, portfolio management, and that it could also be an attractive buy, meaning that the person actually coming in was capturing value and we were getting something out of it beyond just trying to top tick or sell at the highest value. And so we felt like there was really pent up demand for this product and that no one had actually brought a dedicated pool focused on being this liquidity provider. And if you look at every other asset class in the world, people buy and sell assets regularly, whether that's private equity firms selling portfolio companies to other private equity firms or credit managers or real estate investors. And I think eventually that will be as commonplace in litigation finance as it is in others. But given, I think, some of the early stage nature and the competitive dynamics that exist, there needed to be a dedicated pool that could be that catalyst to make it more common. And you know, we've been thrilled with the outcome to date. We'll talk a little bit about just the breadth of opportunity sets we've seen and where we transacted, but the thesis so far has played out. And I'll just say one other thing, sorry to be a little long-winded, but we also observed that on the investor side, the limited partner side, that some folks had started to get a bit tired by extended duration, some of the gross net spreads that emerge from a return perspective when in an early stage litigation finance investment, you make a big commitment of capital that gets drawn down over time. And if cases resolve before resolution, you have this massive underutilization of capital. And so as a GP thinking about what would be attractive to allocators, this definitionally attacks some of the pushback some investors have made on this market. You're definitionally truncating duration because you're entering into these investments multiple years into their life cycle. And you have the benefit of having seen legal cards turn and developments in the case re-underwriting that investment multiple years in with a sort of fully front-loaded deployment of capital.
Given all of those reasons, and why has it taken so long for the secondary market to develop in the litigation finance world, why would you say that process is really just starting to get going now? What's changed?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and I don't know besides just making some observations of what you know have happened to us when we were trying to run our own secondary processes, both at GKC and at Burford. I think first, the universe of buyers, the pools of capital that could actually be the facilitator of that secondary transaction, I think we're all wrong. I mean, when we ran the Peterson process from a secondary perspective, the groups of people that we were in conversation with generally were opportunistic credit hedge funds distressed managers and people who had sometimes an emerging market focus given the Argentinian exposure. And those are all smart, sophisticated investors, to be sure, but they're certainly not dedicated litigation finance players. And oftentimes they were using pools of capital that didn't necessarily mesh with the underlying risk profile of litigation finance. The most logical place for the secondary market to develop would be transacting with other funders. And I think the real dynamic at play, given some of the unique nature of this asset class, you know, first, it is relatively speaking less transparent than other asset classes. And by that, I mean, no one knows that Burford is transacting with XYZ law firm or that Longford has an exposure to XYZ company. Most people have built their portfolios, you know, on a confidential basis. And what we've observed is that from a competitive perspective, people are loath to open their books to direct competitors that they might turn around and either lose a transaction to on the next RFP or the next sell side process. And so what seemed to really make a difference as we first approached the market is that we were coming out as this exclusively focused, dedicated manager to secondary transactions, where people could be comforted that if they lifted the curtain, there was no risk of us being a competitor to. We were really just trying to be a complement to whatever the underlying funder was trying to effectuate. I think that will change with time, but I think there's still enough early stage nature to the competitive landscape that people weren't really looking to transact with other direct competitors.
Since launching GCP then, what would you say in terms of the deal flow, what does that look like? How much of it and what type of deal flow have you been seeing? And given, you know, this is such a new venture, really, I mean, is this what you expected launching this secondaries focused organization? What has surprised you most?
Yeah, look, it has surprised to the upside in terms of just the raw quantity and quantum of opportunity set. We have transacted with 9 unique funders, and we've looked at deals now with over 25. I didn't even know that there were 25 dedicated capital providers in this marketplace. And I'm not exaggerating that a week doesn't go by either with, you know, a manager I'd never heard by name, and I'm surprised they have $200 or $300 million of litigation finance exposure, or a manager or firm that you know very well by name that you had no idea was even in the litigation finance business. And so the breadth and diversity of just counterparty has surprised me to a pretty extreme degree. I mean, we've looked at $3 billion plus notional of transactions to date. The other, I think, surprising thing is, for the most part, the bulk of what we've looked at have been portfolio deals, not single cases. And they've been minority deals, not majority deals. And by that, I mean, we're generally seeing managers that are looking to transact across a broad swath of their portfolio or an entire vintage of a private equity fund, and do so selling only a 10, 20, or 30% position, maintaining the majority of the economics, and still continuing to manage the investment. I could speculate why that's been sort of the biggest end user request. But from our perspective, you know, that checks a bunch of boxes. It's obviously positive optics in terms of someone wanting to remain on risk. It's efficient since they're continuing to manage the investment. And it generally makes it easier to effectuate. I think for the most part, they're getting a pretty material benefit in transacting at that minority level with a third party on an arm's length basis for purposes of validating or taking a new carrying value to a position. When we were first raising the fund on our investor side, I think a logical concern was going to be adverse selection, right? Someone's only going to try to sell you their worst positions. What if they know something that you don't know? And, you know, when we've seen single cases, not portfolios, it's been the exact opposite dynamic, which is people have brought us the best performing things, the highest quality opportunities in their portfolio, because if they're going through the process of monetizing, they're trying to monetize the highest performing thing for the most amount of cash, we have not seen to date a single instance of a sort of sideways or distressed or stressed position. It's been the exact opposite. And the one other thing I'd add is I do think that a fair amount of the sort of opportunistic credit hedge funds that don't have a dedicated strategy like you see at Fortress or DE Shaw or Elliott, but people that just dabbled on the side as part of their broader, more core business, you know, we sometimes call them tourists in the market. They've been a pretty big presence over the last, call it 5 years. And I think that they have started to pull back a little bit because either the opportunity set in their core franchise is more interesting or they've had all the fun they need. And so when we've seen people just looking to exit a portfolio or fully get liquid, they tend to be less of the dedicated players who I think have a better sense of, you know, the value of their portfolio, and they want to have a long-standing presence in this market. And so they might be selling a position or a piece of a portfolio for very different reasons than someone who's just looking to exit the market.
Yeah, those are all really interesting learnings that you really only get when you take the risk of forming a secondaries fund and really getting in this market. What type of primary funders are reaching out for a secondary sale? And what would you say are some of the reasons that the primary funders might transact with a secondary funder?
Yeah, it really is a cross-section of the entire market. So it's been publicly reported that we've transacted with some of the publicly traded organizations. The folks that are trading on some public market, but we've also transacted with all of the dedicated players that have traditional private equity style pools of capital that they've raised, like our legacy GKC business and other fund management constructs. We've also transacted on a few occasions with the limited partners that are investors in those pools of capital. That's much less of a rarity, a sort of LP-led versus GP-led secondary transaction, but we have done those. And then finally, there's a whole group of people that are sort of the last group I was talking about in hedge fund land, where it's not a dedicated strategy, but they have a decent sized presence. And, you know, they're getting whatever internal benefit or external benefit they might be getting by transacting. So it really is, in those 25 plus folks that we've looked at from an opportunity set perspective, everyone under the sun, US-based, UK-based, Australian-based, dedicated players that are publicly traded, dedicated players that are entirely private fund managed, and then these sort of large kind of credit-oriented multi-strats. In terms of the motivations, you know, it's very rare that we're getting an express reason, or to be candid, the express reason that we're being given may not be the actual driver or motivations behind the sale. I will tell you that we're relatively agnostic or indifferent to what the underlying reasoning is behind the transaction. We look at every risk as its own independent opportunity that needs to be underwritten from a bottoms-up fundamental perspective, just as if we were looking at it at that phase of life cycle as a primary funder. What we have heard and what I would speculate are a lot of the drivers are a couple fold. I think first, there's the duration element. I mean, it is the hardest thing to get right in the handicap when you're looking at a litigation finance transaction. And that's just not as a funder, that's as the underlying client, as the law firm, the actual practitioner in the litigation. It is just hard to get duration right. And so we have seen a fair amount of opportunities where it just ran longer than anyone expected. And for either portfolio construction reasons, or you're at the end of the life of a fund and there's a need to liquidate and wind down that vehicle, it's a very logical place to look for some form of liquidity or secondary transaction. You know, think of it as the asset liability mismatch. The second is around that sort of carrying value dynamic. And I think a desire either to validate a current carrying value, take a new position value based on this arm's length transaction. And the motivations behind that can be manifold. You could be a publicly traded company looking to book earnings. You could be a private fund manager about to go raise a new pool of capital, and there's a desire to demonstrate to your current investors that your carrying values have been conservative and that there's embedded value in the underlying portfolio. Or you could be a PM at a large hedge fund who is constantly looking for incremental allocations of capital from your investment committee and, you know, demonstrable return with an arm's length transaction is a powerful thing. You know, there can also just be prudent risk management, and there's nothing wrong with someone having been in the position for a period of time, having that position trend incredibly positively and a desire to just either exit, ring the register, or to monetize some portion to go off risk. We're comfortable with all of those different dynamics. I think just the last place where it's been kind of an interesting element because it plays to a couple of big themes that are very high profile right now in the space, secondaries and in the insurance market. But we've been invited in a few instances where an insurance company is looking at hedging either through a judgment preservation policy or some principal wrapper, more than just the capital at risk, but some profit for the underlying funder. And they're generally loath to do that without some market validation of what that exposure is actually worth. And so we can come in and bridge the bid ask between broker and underwriter and underlying funder for, you know, a large principal wrapper or judgment preservation policy. And we've actually effectuated one of those.
Let's talk about structuring a secondaries transaction. How is this done? Is this like just completely bespoke? Or do you have standardizations in place? Have you had enough volume to start thinking about standardization here?
Yeah, it's actually trended the other direction, which is, I think, a healthy thing. It's shifted from there's really only one way to transact here, which is us just outright buying a piece of or the entire position, to a little bit more bespoke in terms of, do you want to maintain upside? Do you want us to be senior in the waterfall, and in return for that, we pay a higher price? Do you want us to give you back end, and in which case we pay a lower premium? Or do you want us just own it pari passu? I mean, we really can come up with a variety of structures and pricing that makes sense for us, really solely determined by what the underlying primary funder is trying to accomplish. In general, how we've structured these is to buy into generally the underlying subco that holds the LFA, not go into and directly step into the shoes of the underlying funding transaction. You know, implicit in that is it's not always known to the underlying client, whether that's a law firm or a corporate, that a secondary transaction is happening. We have done sort of synthetic exposures where we enter into a participation agreement, and we've done others where we just buy into the underlying entity that holds that position without going any level deeper. But I think the more interesting point is how it started, in that at the early days, it was really just, we either are buying a position or we're buying a portion of a position, and we own that pari passu with the underlying funder. More recently, we have done transactions where you can think of us as sitting at different places in the waterfall, and we're also agnostic to where we sit and how we do that, as long as the pricing is commensurate with the underlying risk that we're entering into. And so we have done transactions where I think we are paying a meaningfully higher price than fair value, but in return for that, we're getting structural seniority in the waterfall. And we've done deals where we're paying decidedly a discount to fair value, but in return for that, we're giving upside or a back end to the underlying funder. And in essence, they're getting an infinite return on invested capital because they're off risk on that portion.
Just surprising to see the maturity of that so quickly. What are some, given, I mean, how fast this is evolving, what are some questions that some of the primary funders might have for someone like yourself seeking a secondary sale? Are there common questions you're getting from your clients?
Yeah, I think let's start maybe with the concerns, because we heard more of those in the earlier days than we did more recently, but I still think it's a relevant thing to focus on, because we need more of these addressed so that it becomes much more commonplace. I think that there was a perceived perspective that a primary funder selling a position would be, quote, leaving money on the table. and that either their limited partners or the public shareholders wouldn't like the idea of, if you believe in an investment and if a sophisticated buyer wants to own that risk from here, why would you ever sell it? I think, you know, my flippant response is, well, every other market in the universe exists with people buying and selling, and quote, leaving money on the table is just the nature of transacting, whether it's a public security or a piece of real estate or a credit investment or a portfolio company at a private equity firm. But I think, you know, very excitingly, the reception to date when people have transacted and it's been reported to whatever internal or external constituency, it's been quite well received. You know, you've seen Omni Bridgeway announce publicly some secondary transactions and the stock has traded up, and that's been rewarded by both sell side research and their own public shareholders. You know, we've seen personal instances of limited partners applauding capital coming back and getting more liquid on positions for whatever underlying reason. And so I think the more transactions that happen here, the more comfort primary funders get to alleviate some of those early nature concerns that we heard. I think more broadly on questions, it's generally been about process and structure. You know, how granular are you going to be on your underwriting? You know, how disruptive is it going to be to our underlying relationship with our client? You know, how much of a bandwidth suck is it going to be for our team? And I think generally we've thrived historically, both at GKC and now at GCP, with thinking about this as a client service business. You know, we're investors, obviously, and we protect our investors' capital, but we really do try to be accommodating to the needs of our counterparties because we view them as clients. And so being transparent, efficient, and fair as we go through those underwriting processes has been sort of a mantra we try to stick with.
All right, and so final question now. How would GCP's presence as the only dedicated secondaries fund, how do you see that impacting the growth of the litigation finance industry overall?
Yeah, look, I think whether it's just GCP or others that'll enter the market, which I'll get to in a second, it can only be bullish for continued flow and opportunity set for primary funders. I mean, our goal is to bring more liquidity, more pricing transparency, and generally just more sort of corporate finance and risk management activity to the legal ecosystem. And when those exist, you can't help but have more capital flow into the market. And so I think some of the really only noted weaknesses of funding as an asset class, you know, the limited liquidity, some of the duration risk, some of the pricing, some of the difficulty of determining true arm's length pricing, you know, all of those are alleviated. And when those are alleviated, it either gives more comfort to the investors who have allocated capital to the market to date, or it opens the door to new pools of capital that have always stayed away historically because of some of those limitations. And we've seen, again, firsthand, instances where our transaction gave comfort to limited partners who were on the fence about re-upping to a new vehicle or an incremental vintage, finally get comfort. And so I think it's only going to increase the ability of primary funders to raise more capital, to deploy more capital comfortably, and to manage some of the duration and liquidity issues that do arise. I will say, from a competitive perspective, I expect by next year us to not be the only dedicated player in secondaries. And I expect 5 years from now for secondary transactions to be common between fierce competitors, Longford transacting with Burford, Fortress transacting with D.E. Shaw. And what I've observed, having been at sort of the first wave back all the way in 2012 in this market, is that as more competition comes in, ironically, supply of opportunity set increases. It's almost like a Laffer curve. So the more people that are out there talking about this, that are trying to price these risks, that are out there, you know, being advocates for it as a product, the more opportunity set there will be for me and for others who either have dedicated secondary pools or who are just looking to put interesting risk on in this ecosystem.
really great and exciting stuff. We've been talking about secondaries for a while at Litigation Finance Journal. We reported on, you know, when are secondaries going to happen? When are they going to be a thing? We've been doing that for years. And so I'm so glad to see it finally take off. It's a lot of exciting exciting things on the horizon. And you mentioned insurance, and you mentioned just the general growth of the industry based on the presence of secondary. So really terrific to see. Adam, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and for sharing your thoughts on the secondaries market and litigation finance.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and if you're interested in learning more about Adam and Gershon Capital Partners, you can visit them at their website, www.gershon.com. That's GERCHEN.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you on the next episode of the Litigation Finance Podcast.